Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mindful Pod. I'm here with Ryan Felix. Ryan is a good friend of mine, pretty recent friend in the last year or so, 2 years. We met on LinkedIn. I've shout out to LinkedIn. It's been an amazing thing since I've actually, just wanted to meet people and realized actually it's absolutely fine to meet people. I had a bit of a block of meeting people online and getting to know them, but in the last year, letting that go has been such a huge change for me, and I've met some amazing people, and Ryan is one of them. So welcome, Ryan. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So I'm going to let you introduce yourself. You've got various different things going on, but I'd love to hear from you just in terms of a little bit of history so people can understand, because you've got such an interesting path into foundership, entrepreneurship, whatever you want to call it, done a lot of traveling whilst doing it and various different projects. So fire away.
Yeah. Thank you. And thanks to LinkedIn as well. I enjoy the shout out for them. And my background is, it's interesting because usually, on a podcast, people come out and they're like, this is me, this is what I do, this is what I am. And I was just thinking earlier, like, does anyone ever really know where they're going? Like, you can't really know. So I can give you an idea of what I'm doing at the moment, where I've come from, but I'm just like being guided by something somewhere and enjoying that process. So
I love that.
Yeah. Right now, my experiences have got me to this point of running a soft skills education company, in the learning development sphere, and happen to be in the corporate space. If you'd asked me that 2.5 years ago, I'd have said like, I'm never going to be doing that. That doesn't sound like me. But I think something I've collected over the years is the ability to take the ingredients of the experiences I've got and what are the fundamentals of these experiences and how can I apply them in a different arena, therefore not boxing myself into a specific or siloing myself into a specific arena, just being able to use the skills I've acquired, which sometimes are good, sometimes they don't fit, in another area. So I grew up in North Wales. I'm from a small town, about 10,000 people. I'm fluent in Welsh and pretty good in English. I remember when I was growing up, there was a time where it was probably about 14, 15, just looking around at the world and really having these realizations of, I don't know what it is, but there's more out here, outside of, Wales is beautiful, but outside of this place, there's more going on. And to the point of, when I was 16, there was a subway that opened in our hometown. So we used to run out of school to go and get subways, right? I thought there was only a subway in my town. I had no idea it was this like huge international, awful food company. So that's an idea of kind of the town, but I always knew that there was more out there. And I think that belief structure came from, when I was 8 years old, I lost my dad. He took his own life, and, it's obviously an extremely hard thing to go through. And on the other side of that, it also through the trauma, which I believe trauma is a gift, as hard as that can be sometimes to take, or how it can sound. I do believe it is a gift. And that gift for me was allowing me to view the world differently and I put myself in a protective box where I was able to view the world I was in, not necessarily be in that world. And I can remember from a young age, observing adults, people like our age now and older, and I wouldn't just listen to them and like just agree to what they were saying. Maybe I would verbally, but in myself, be like, are these people really living? Yeah. Right? And I'd question it. And I just couldn't stop questioning it. So yeah, that got me on this path of, I guess, this self-discovery or discovery in general, knowing that there's more, which is a blessing and a curse, because once you open the Pandora's box of there's other ways to live apart from the patterns and programs of how, you know, people are normally brought up, then once you know they're there, you got to go and chase them and find out. So, yeah, I went to sixth form, started the job as an outdoor instructor at 18. That was that was a fork in the road for me, because I was working in home base selling kitchens and bathrooms, clip-on tie, big orange shirt, learning how to sell. And they wanted me to start becoming a team leader. And I was like, oh, wow, I can be on like 20-something grand a year. I can upgrade my Vauxhall Corsa to maybe an Astra, you know. And then one day my mum invited a guy she knows who works for this outdoor centre, who used to work for the outdoor centre, and it's in around mid Wales. And she got him to come to the house and explain to me the benefit of taking a 90% pay cut a month, but being able to live on site, becoming an outdoor instructor, and what that will do for my life that I can't currently yet see. And everything external of me was saying, that's stupid. Why would I do that? Why would I go and live in the middle of nowhere? Why would I go down, you know, 9 pegs in my 18-year-old career, or 18-year-old, yeah, career as an 18-year-old? And something inside my intuition just said, I need to go and do it. So yeah, that's when I made the decision. It's not about money right now. This is about life experiences. And at 18, and I became an instructor until about 20. Went to university because I didn't have the grades to go to uni, but I did have an opportunity to do like an exchange. So they were doing a program with the outdoor center where they would send an outdoor instructor to university to kind of see what would happen to them when they came back. And I was fortunate enough to go on that. Went to live in Norway whilst I was in university. And that was one of the key reasons I actually went to uni, was because I could live in Norway for 5 months. And I'm thinking, at 21, didn't I even have the awareness to think, I can just get on a flight and go to Norway and figure something out when I'm there? But on reflection, looking back and thinking, wow, I thought I had to go into how many tens of thousands of pounds worth of debt to have the opportunity to go to Norway. So yeah, that's funny. One of the Erasmus exchanges. Wouldn't change it, but just funny piece of awareness for myself. Went to Norway, came back, went then whilst I was in uni to do a season in Napa, Ayia Napa in Cyprus.
Yeah, that's where our connection comes from. That's where we probably first crossed paths. We just didn't know.
On a drunken night on the strip somewhere. But you know what? I've probably learned the most in my life during living in Norway, because we would eat out of the bins because we couldn't afford to eat food, and building communities based around resource for the Erasmus students, and living in Ayia Napa in Cyprus, where, you know, I'd sell a ticket for a party for €30, I would keep 10, my British boss would keep 10, and the Cypriot mafia would keep 10 for protection. And that's when I felt like I'm living in like San Andreas here, like Grand Theft Auto. But the values and business principles it taught me there were, yeah, invaluable. Being chased with tasers and all sorts of fun stuff. So, yeah, did that for a summer, came back, hitchhiked through Europe the next summer after my graduation. And that's where I really had, you could say, an awakening. Was after hitchhiking through Europe, I had an amazing time. So many synchronicities, life was flowing, seeing the generosity of people, seeing what life could be like. Went to Hideout Festival, you know, and spent 6 days there partying. Came back, was still a bit, let's say, delirious. Went to South Wales to get my graduation, to do my graduation. I remember you probably graduated, right? And you get this pipe, and they're like, pretend it's your scroll, but it's actually a
oh yeah,
And I'm like, everyone's going around like cattle, getting their pictures, holding this pipe. I was like, this whole thing is like, what the hell is going on? And then my class threw their pointy hats in the air, and I just observed them, watched them. And that was the day I decided that I'm going to go to Southeast Asia to become a teacher. I overheard someone else saying it. And my mom asked me, what am I going to do in my life? And I said, I'm going to go and do that. I'm going to be a teacher in Southeast Asia too. She was like, well, what? When did you think about that? I was like, just now. So I sold all my stuff. And then that's how that journey started. And to cut a long story short, did a bit of teaching, did a lot of traveling, became a model full time for a while, which is really interesting. And then met a guy on a bus who introduced me to affiliate marketing and direct sales, started doing that, grew communities online. And then recently I lived in about 10, 12 countries now. And now I've got a corporate business in the UK off the back of all that.
Oh my God. There are so many places I want to go. I don't know where to go, but I'm so glad that you gave that. And I didn't try and introduce you, because as you can see, it's from those listening, Ryan's done a lot. And it kind of sounds like when you've gone through life, and maybe it's because of, I don't know what you put this down to, but it sounds like to me, you kind of just like made decisions based on intuition. And it doesn't sound like, a lot of people have like a bit of a paralysis of making decisions, especially when growing up, they've got voices in their head. And I just wonder, what is that, how you kind of have gone through life, like just sort of feeling it to a certain degree? And how do you know when you're doing the right thing is what I feel like a lot of people ask. Mm. How do you know?
Growing up in the Western world, we are built and wired with logic. And logic is a slice of the brain. It's not the whole brain. It's not the whole functionality of what we have access to. Logic's great if you're building a building, building foundations, building a car. Look at Western civilization, what we've built, right? But things are pretty fucking built now. And we need to use the same level of thinking, or the same mode of the brain as we have done, first of all. And I do believe for myself, following my intuition has got me into some great places, but also taught me some great lessons. So maybe I followed my intuition on some occasions and I've ended up in a scary situation or a risky situation, sometimes even life-threatening situations. And those have also helped guide me, like put me on this path. So I think by trusting your intuition, or even connecting with it first, because what even is that? You know, if we've been stuck in, most of us, in towns or cities, we're surrounded by concrete, there's a fight for our attention all day, every day, even more now than, 15, 20 years ago when I first started following my intuition. And we can't hear our own voice. So as you said, the voice is in the head. Is that us? Is that something else? Like, but our own voice only whispers every now and then. And the better you can get with listening to the whisper, like that's the intuition and the feeling. Like, oh, sometimes I'll get it. I know I need to speak to someone, right? And it's not always the easiest thing to do by following the intuition. Like, working with yourself, we got on some calls. Intuition's like, oh, I know I need to get a coach in with Alexi. But have I got 1,000 reasons I can probably write down why I shouldn't do that? But there's something that's like, oh, I have to. And it doesn't make logical sense, right? But when you go in, or when I've gone and spoken to people, be it mentors, be it peers, the best experiences in that, the quantum leaps that they have in their lives and businesses have all come from following their intuition. There's a time and place for logic and reason.
Yeah.
That's it. It's a time and a place. It's not all the time in all the places. Otherwise, your life's fucking boring. I believe. And I've never wanted a boring life. I've always wanted, yeah. I think that's probably from losing my dad. I've probably been like, well, I know I've been like, well, I've lost one of the most important things in my life. So fuck it. I might as well go and do what I want to do and enjoy. Right. So I think that's subconsciously inside me somewhere. Like I've got to make the most of this experience.
Okay.
Following my intuition has always been great.
I love that. And I think what you've said is amazing. And I hope kind of it really sinks in, and I want to, you know, give it some airtime, because often people argue between one type of mindset and the other, or one type of like mind and the other, like having a logical mind, or I'm really logical, or I'm really, you know, I just go with my gut all the time. And it's like, you're not saying go with one or the other all the time, just saying there's a time and a place. And I think that's so powerful, because in this day and age, you often hear one person talking about how they've used intuition to become, you know, this multimillionaire, or to become really happy, or whatever it is. And you sort of think, but you can't do that all the time. It doesn't. Like, as you said, it can get you into a lot of trouble. There's certain things. It's almost deciding where you need to be logical, where and when you need to be, you know, more following your intuition. And I think it's also so interesting that you attribute that to, you know, more of the kind of intuition side. And maybe that's, as you alluded to, because of a reduction of fear, because one of the worst things has already happened to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier that you kind of attribute trauma and talking about being in a bubble and being able to see people better. Was that to do with the trauma? Do you think that's to do with the trauma, or do you think it's to do with kind of who you are as a person in terms of being able to see like that? Because I know quite a few people have been through trauma and don't, let's say, have that same kind of, oh, you're just like aware of everyone and everything and that. But how do you kind of decide between what that experience has done for you and the way that you've kind of lived your life? Because you make it sound positive, which I know a lot of people can struggle with.
Yeah, I think when you really boil it down, I've had times, especially growing up, where I do like it's negative, it's bad, or why has this happened to me? And you know, that kind of mindset, it can teach you not to be like that. I mean, there's no blame. I don't blame people for being and thinking that way, because everyone reacts and responds differently, especially depending on their external environment as well. But for me, yeah, it was horrific. But what's the point of dwelling on something for too long? Like it's a scenario. Something happened, you know, it can be awful, but there's also things that you can learn from that experience. You know, John D. Martini, in some of his seminars, he'll get people to write down the worst things that have happened to them in their lives, and then write down why it's the best thing that could have ever happened to them as well, and write down hundreds of reasons. So you can reframe it in yourself. And I do believe that that's something maybe I've done. I've never actually done the practice of it. My mom's always been extremely supportive and allowed me to go and do whatever I wanted, be it go and play football, be it go to karate, swimming, you know, hiking, Duke of Edinburgh. She'd always biking, running, always try and get me out to then experience the world. And as hard as it is for her as a parent to also do that and watch her son like go away for a prolonged period of time, she's also created an experience of allowance for that. So I think that there's many answers to it, but during having all of those experiences, or collected those experiences, I've learned to to listen to my intuition through them all. Because then you understand yourself in many different experiences. Then when you go into a new one, you've got more experience to draw on. So it's better. So I think when a really traumatic thing happens to people, process it. You need to go and dig deep, do the work, bring out what needs to come out, which I've probably still got some work to do on that in some areas of my life. But you can either go on an upward trajectory or a downward trajectory. And as tough as it is to say, it is a choice. It's always a choice.
Yeah. No, I feel that. And I think the reason I talk about it is because I've heard various different ways of talking. You know, trauma's a big thing and these life-changing moments or, you know, a really, really big topic. And a lot of people are weighing in on how you should look at it. And you kind of alluded again there, which I really love, which is that, you know, there are lots of ways to look at it. And ultimately, one of my beliefs is that whatever makes you feel good and do good, you know, to a certain degree, is what you should kind of follow. You know, whatever's going to give you that meaningful, fulfilling life. It's the same as how, you know, if someone's like, oh, what should I think about in terms of what we, you know, what death is like? I'm like, well, whatever's going to make you feel great now, because you have no idea what it's going to be like, you know, because that, for me, and that, again, that's just my belief. That's how I live. And so what you're saying, I think, talking about trauma as a gift could be quite triggering to a lot of people. It's sort of really, and I understand why, but how have you, or how for someone that maybe that is triggering, how can you help them understand why you see it as a gift? Why has it been a gift to you? Like, do you have it particular examples to share?
Yeah, I would say if anyone's someone who's triggered by that and is still watching, they obviously want to work through that the trigger, right? And I would say go and hang out with people who have experienced some kind of like bad trauma. And you'll usually find them together, and they're oftentimes in some kind of mastermind. They're oftentimes, you know, eating around a table in a great restaurant. And a lot of these people are high performers, and not only success in business and stuff like that, and financial isn't everything, but oftentimes that can be the case. But other times they're doing interesting things with their lives and are wealthy in a different way, because they view life differently as well. So I think before it's processed properly, it can be a downward trajectory, you know, avoidance. And in avoidance comes things like drugs, alcohol, escapism, you know, a fucking cherry vape or 8 in 3 days. Constant dopamine hits on the phone, porn, all these things that can take people's attention away. And then anything that comes to your environment that's going to remind you of the trauma, you're going to be triggered and then going to go back to try and ignore it. So I would say, like, there's a really amazing charity called Winston's Wish. They help children and young adults who've been bereaved in a traumatic way. And I went to one of their weekends where I met for the first time a bunch of other kids who have lost a parent, lost two parents, lost a brother, sister, like had something horrible happen to them. And it made me realize, wow, there's other people like me. I'm not alone. People are doing different stuff. And it was facilitated by, I guess, people my age now who had been through something similar and were helping facilitate this whole experience. And we were talking about it. So I was, for the first time ever, talking about this, talking about the loss of my dad, talking about how I felt about it. And I'm like literally shaking. I didn't know how to speak about it. But through that process, it was like unlocked the gate for me. Okay. And it was like a release. Right. So what I would say is find support. Give me a message. I'm always happy to help and speak to people through things that they're going through or have been through. Find a group of people that you can speak to, come to terms with what's happened, and then you can actually realize you don't have to come to be like, oh, this is a great thing that's happened to me, but you can see like, because of this, this makes me, if you think of it as yourself as a piece of a computer code in, let's say, a matrix, right? Your coding's changed. Therefore, you are not who you used to be. The patterns you used to have, you can't live those anymore. The habits you used to have, like you've been exposed a bit. You've been exposed to yourself a little bit more. So then when you rebuild and reshape yourself, you fit into it in a different paradigm within your own matrix, right? And I think when that change has really happened to people through the traumatic experience, they're trying to live their life as they did before that, but you can't. So the more life's pushing you, the more people are trying to suppress it. That's the downward spiral, I believe. But the more you can come to terms with it, come to have these realizations, then you can move on and see what good you can do because that's happened to you. I don't have a PhD, but that's my interpretation of the benefits and drawbacks and benefits of trauma.
Yeah. But also you mentioned some examples of what's helped you, which I think is often people really look at complex things that you can do but actually what you've said is quite simple in terms of what you should do. But the tough part is actually turning up, feeling those feelings, as you said, like that you do not want to be there. Everything's telling you, your logical part of your brain is telling you, you don't want to go down this hole. You don't want to go and look at that trauma again. But often you hear it so much, that is the only way. It's the only way to look it square in the face to a certain degree. And then you put it in a really interesting way that it suddenly just changes this coding when you come out and you just feel different. Like, it doesn't mean that you're fixed. It doesn't mean you're kind of healed, but that seems to be the way that a lot of people who have worked through things talk about it. And you've also said that it's something that still lives with you, which I think is an important thing to mention. It's not like we're not ever sort of perfect or completely fixed. And it would be weird if you could shut that, that memory of your dad completely away. So I think that's really useful to share. You mentioned something a little bit earlier about inputs in your life and reducing inputs, and how it's kind of goes back to talk how you hear that inner voice. And I think inputs is something that I'm super interested in, especially at the moment. I've just come back from a silent meditation retreat. I've done one before this, but it kind of reignited all the reasons as to why it's such a great experience in it. It's similar to, I think, what you're talking about. But how you implement that to be able to listen to your thoughts, the real thoughts, you know, you're talking about how we're in a day and age where it's becoming harder and harder to just have only you and only your thoughts. So what are the sort of things that you do in order to do that? I know that you live quite like you travel quite a lot. So you're always going to different places, but I'd love to hear, like, how do you create that space in your life? What's been the greatest help in allowing you to really hear your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm going to pick your brain about the silent retreat as well, because it's something I've really, really wanted to do. And for me, through traveling alone, going to a new country, being on my own, I'm trying to establish myself, sometimes failing, sometimes doing well, and everything in between. But each time you go up against your ego, each new opportunity, new environment, you go up against your ego. And I've gone up against my ego. And every single time, I've had this like realization of like, in this new environment, I can observe my ego instead of let it run my life. So if your ego is used to one thing in a certain setting, like you're in year two in school, boom, your ego is based in year two. If you physically take yourself out of year two and you walk into the class of year three, right, aka go into a new country, new stuff, what your ego is saying to keep you safe in the classroom is not applicable in this place, right? So then you're like, hold on, who the fuck's this guy? He hasn't got a clue what he's on about. So, like, he doesn't know what goes on in year three. So you have to use a new part of yourself experientially to learn about this new classroom. This is year three. The chairs are a bit bigger. The books are different. The teacher's a bit different, right?
Yeah. Or it's adapting.
Exactly. It's adapting. And I learned where my voice was by shutting up the other voices, I think. And you can do that manually by physically putting yourself in different scenarios, different environments, different situations, because then you know what's bullshit here and what's real. And I would say spending time in nature as well, quieting down. Some of the voices go, the whisper can come out, because you know we don't get woo woo, but we're all nature. We are connected to nature. We were built of nutrients that comes from the ground. Right, so we are connected to it.
Well, we say, and on that we say woo woo, and it's like, I don't know a single person that doesn't say, "Oh my god, walking in nature is so nice." When they do eventually do it, right? Even if they do it once a year, it's like, "Oh, that really helped. That really gave me a new perspective." And it's like we call it woo woo. It's like it's magic, because nature is magic. We just have to watch David Attenborough, or any show, or anything about any animal, including ourselves, or any vegetation, and we're like, that's fucking magic.
Yeah.
Like, it is. Of course it's woo-woo. It's but that makes it sound bad. It's like, we've got it all here. It's like why I laugh when people are like, I wonder what aliens would be like. It's like, we've got aliens on this planet right now. Like, look at some of the creatures that are wandering around, like, including ourselves. We're the aliens. I butted straight into your train of thought.
We live in a realm of absolute magic. Like, it's a gift, and we can go and explore these places. And again, by limiting what we're talking about in nature, is we're limiting distractions, limiting things, taking our awareness away from us and putting our attention on ourselves, on nature. Nature doesn't have any bad intentions. Maybe the fucking Coca-Cola ad might have some bad intentions, or ends up having bad intentions, right? And that's how I would say to hear or listen to that. To that voice is go and do things on your own. Learn about yourself in different scenarios, different environments. And that kind of leads me into, like the way of the world right now. We live in a time of mass comfort. We're in these apartments. It's great. I can go downstairs. I've got the jacuzzi, sauna, steam room. I walk down in my towel. Right? What a life. People are ordering. I don't really order delivery and stuff like that, but people are ordering every single day, right? Students from other countries, students from the UK, living in these block of apartments as well. This is just an example. Delivery, 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 study, study, study. And people are more depressed than ever in their lives, working as well. There's a lack of purpose. It's a lack of vision, drive, even though we're more connected than ever before. And through my experiences, so I've done some challenges through stuff like hitchhiking, paddleboarded for 39 hours, pretty much nonstop, and done Spartans and these kind of things where I have to force myself to leave the comforts. I've done expeditions of when I was over in Norway, up to 2 weeks long with no phones. And when I go back to my comfortable life after that, I appreciate it. I remember in Norway, if I wanted a cup of tea, 10 days into an exped, I'm fucking soaking wet through. There's 10 more of us. It's my duty. I'm the tea guy. I'm the British guy in this Erasmus thing. I've got to walk 2 kilometers with a pot to the river whilst my teammates are building a fire. We've got rations of tea, right? And we're all collectively coming together to have this cup of tea. Now, logically speaking, that's ridiculous. And that cup of tea should not be nice. But it's one of the best tasting teas of my life. And if I look back and reflect, if you're going to come to me right now, shoot me in the head, what am I going to think of? It's all the times I went through struggle and hardship and had this like ecstasy moments during them. That's what I'm going to remember. And how often do people get those, right? Generally, generalization right now in the Western world, we do not have that because we don't understand what that hardship can do for us. And when I got back from this expedition, I'm in my apartment in Norway. I say to Harry, my flatmate, "Harry, should we have a tea?" He said, "Oh yeah." I walk to the tap, put the kettle underneath, put it on. And I remember thinking whilst I was on the expedition, "Oh, it's going to be great when I'm back and I can just drink tea." And it's the only time I would say I've ever felt a depression of some sorts. Because I hadn't earned it. I hadn't worked for it. It was easy. And that's the first time when I was like 22 or something, I realized this comfortable life isn't, it's the most uncomfortable. It's like is it called a juxtaposition where it's like, actually it's the most uncomfortable thing mentally for me because I don't deserve this. I've not worked for it. So you get to those quiet places, those quiet thoughts by, I would say, through some hardships in different environments, to cut a long story short.
Yeah, I think what you went into is one of the most interesting lessons of life, that it doesn't make logical sense, right? Again, like going back to it doesn't make logical sense to the being in comfort all the time that you're not going to feel happy.
Yeah.
But it's the opposite. Like, as you're saying, it's just not like that. Maybe not all the time, right? You don't want to be in, there's a balance. And that was actually going to be one of my questions is, because I think people also get caught out making life harder for themselves. And I'm wondering if you have seen something there's a difference between this, right? It's pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, but not making life hard just on purpose. Or maybe actually we do, right? We do. And this is why ice baths people are talking about it so much, because it's like, if that's the worst part of your day, it makes every other part of the day feel better.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Do you understand the sort of question I've put in there in terms of like, when do you find that you're actually falling into the trap of making life harder and it's not necessary or doesn't help?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm sick of seeing Instagram ads with different ice baths all the time. That's all I get.
There's so many different types.
There
it's
are.
Unbelievable what some of these ice baths can now do. I mean, we really innovate to the point where we've basically got ice bath spaceships sort of flying around. It's like you're going to be able to do everything. There's going to be ice baths for dogs soon. It's going to be the next one.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing. Come on, look, dogs follow our pattern, right? Like, it's the same as what's happening with dog food. Dog food is now, we've been given sort of all this crap, GMO, you know, like stuff that we didn't know was bad for us. And we've been continuously, now that we've changed, we've got organic, we've got proper food. It's a nice tangent. I love these types of tangent. Mm. And we're feeding our dogs like absolute shite. Like we're literally feeding them. We're still feeding them absolute crap. And there's a few companies now, and in America, they're doing fresh dog food. which is actually made up of real food, like real meat, real veg or whatnot. Whereas 90% of the food that we have here in the UK is. So it's all to say that we will get there, because as soon as we start realizing we need to eat well, then we'll start realizing our dogs do. And actually, we might even be at the point where we treat our dogs better than ourselves. That's another thought.
Yeah, people generally do. I love what you said there, because I've recently got a cat and I feed him raw food. So there's a company in the UK as well. He eats the same as me, pretty much, like meat all the time. And I get him chicken necks, and I took him to the vets recently, and he needed to, where he gets his balls chopped off, muted, something like that.
Neutered.
So
I took muted is quite a mean.
Muted. Yeah, I had his voice box taken out. Well, when I was in,
kind of is, yeah.
And I saw this sign. It said, "Dogs and cats get Alzheimer's too." Then there was a thing for diabetes in animals. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, I've never been to a vet's before. I'm like, this is fucking ludicrous. Cats and dogs do not get Alzheimer's.
And depression. And like, as in, there's drugs to make dogs feel better as well.
So I'm thinking,
or behavioral drugs.
Yeah, behavioral drugs, the doggy Adderalls, you know, Ritalins.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm like, how can someone come into this place, look at that, and think, yeah, that makes sense? Like, can't you see that? They are mimicking our lifestyles, but then our lifestyles are also shifting. And when he got his balls chopped off, sorry, Merlin, afterwards he was supposed to wear the comb for like 10 days, and they're like, the wounds are going to be like really bad and all this stuff. Actually, he was fine. After 3 days, 4 days, I took his comb off, completely healed, because he's eating good food. So they're expecting him to take way longer to heal, because usually their clients eat bullshit. And they've just got I was down in London recently at an event, and they had this huge like pet conference, vets, like it was huge in the XL.
Yep.
And it was kind of like they've maximized what they can do to humans in terms of like making them sick through food and lifestyle, giving them a bunch of pills, big food, big pharma. It's like they're doing the same with pets now. It's like we've maximized what
they are. They're pretty much all owned by one or two companies again. And it's like the profits, cause we've been recently looking into investing in a fresh food, dog company in the UK. So I do actually know something about it, cause I've really started to look into it. It's all owned by a handful of companies. The profit margins on them are like on the food is insane. It's just getting more and more and more, because they keep, you know, because no one can see what's in the food, and no dog can be like, hey, this is shit. Like, and it's the really interesting studies that they've done on them is actually, it's about the behavior, right? Which I think is relevant to the conversation we're having, because we could talk about the fact that, you know, dogs, there are so many fat animals wandering around, and we're wondering why. And it's two simple things. It's the what we're feeding them. It's actually always more what we're feeding, right? It's the same as if you exercise as much as you want, but you're eating shit most of the time. That's what people are now realizing, is that is what's keeping you fat. And I'm being delicate with this conversation, because it's a tough one to talk about, but it's important. And yes, so to go back to the food, it's the behavior that is relevant to humans as well. Just that we don't realize when we eat crap, or we generally don't realize when we eat crap because we can't see it, it changes our behavior. And they've done studies where they've seen that, you know, people go in, they're like, I don't know why my dog is so erratic. You know, they're over the puppy stage. They're this, they're that, like they're 5 years old, should be all right. And they're erratic, and they're a bit like angry, or they've got like sort of, it's just something not quite right, and they change their diet and they're fine. like within months, you know, of changing their diet. They're a lot calmer, a lot more sort of level headed. And we see it. We've seen the studies in humans as well that is pretty much similar. Like even to the point of, I think there was an amazing prison study that they did where they gave half of them a vitamin every day and the other half didn't get a vitamin. And I think it was a placebo pill, just in case. And the reoffending rates after they left prison was so much higher in the ones that had taken the sugar pill, showing that like even just basic nutrients can really help you make better decisions. Mm-hmm. Like that's overall and feel better ultimately, right? And not feel cooped up. And I see it with dogs that you, and cats, you can see they're like, it's just not quite right. I think I've seen the change in front of my eyes, in front of our eyes. Like didn't see this many fat, sort of angry looking dogs, at least scientific way. And it's sad. It's sad because it's sadder almost than with humans, I find, partly because I love dogs, like a lot of people, but dogs don't have the choice, right? Like they can't say like, oh, why are you feeding me this? But anyway, it's a good old tangent, but it's something that I'm really passionate about. And I think it does relate to just realizing food is nutrition is so important to us as well and getting out.
It is. And maybe it was about 4 months ago, I had a post that did really well on LinkedIn. And I talked about basically, if you want to be healthy, eat clean whole foods, preferably organic or grass-fed if you eat meat. And like, go outside, walk, like, you know, the things that you and I know are going to help you live an incredible life that isn't that difficult to do. And some guys were commenting on it, talking about like, oh, you're going to say like processed foods is the reason why, you know, I've been on mental health or some tablets or my friends on this and that. And like use it like anger. So number one, anger. Number two, I was like, if you're eating junk, it's proven. Like you can't find this science. It's not gonna, they're gonna tell you this on the fucking news, mate, right? But you can see the science and you can see the correlation between junk food and lack of having a good life. And yeah, literally, if you're taking chemicals to feel better, it's because you're chemically altered yourself, because you're not at your natural homeostasis, right? So if you're taking chemicals from like big food and big pharma, oftentimes are run by very, very similar companies who have vested interest in one another. Like you're filling yourself up with some chemicals and you go into another one to get different chemicals so you can kind of feel normal, right? So actually, yes, that is what I'm saying, that if you are eating junk, you're not helping yourself in terms of being mentally fitter and better. And as you were saying, Alexi, like, now we're becoming more conscious, more aware. There's a shift towards eating great food. Like I'm always ordering from locally sourced meats, organic meats, eggs. Like I go to some shops here in Manchester and I love supporting local businesses. And what I really think is ironic is that the people that shout the most against like, oh, you're eating like red meat, and we can go into red meat and stuff like that, but based people that are shouting the most against someone like me, who I'm an advocate for fitness, keeping fit, staying fit, feeling good, eating clean whole foods, shopping local, like keeping the micro economies going, the same people who are seemingly shouting against like, oh, what's going on in the world, like blame this, blame that, blame the other, like these are the people that are generally investing their money into huge supermarkets and taking from there. And that convenience of having huge supermarkets comes at cost. And that cost is oftentimes your health. So when anything's super convenient, there's usually a cost to pay off, but people aren't thinking that. They're thinking short term. And another thing I like is a lot of people say, oh yeah, but it's fine. If people have got money, then you can do this and do that. Well, actually, really, in an economy, every pound you spend, or dollar, or yen, whatever, is a vote for the future that you want. You know, that has more power, voting power, right? Where you're actually putting your resource. So you actually do get to choose which side or which multiple sides or the, not even side, direction that you want the world to go in as well. So yeah, that's my piece on food. And I agree. Things are changing, and it's great to see there's just more variety of incredible food every single month. Now I see like more ads for amazing food companies that will deliver like organic meat to your door and all this stuff. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I think what was really interesting, it was amazing how we brought that back straight back around to comfortability. And kind of like, again, it's these choices and even these daily choices that you make. Firstly, you're going to feel good about putting a pound, as you said, towards the future that you want, for the price of, you know, actually a bit of your time or a bit of effort or a bit more money. And money is the one that triggers a lot of people. And, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I can see the people that make the same, if not more than me, and they make the excuse of money, and it's purely a choice of where you're putting your money. I can't speak of people who have less money than me. There's no point in even doing that. But the people that have the same, that I know of, they're choosing it on certain things, whether it's like deliveries or going out more or on alcohol, etc. There's so many. To actually eat healthy is nothing compared to what you're spending on these other things, these luxuries, which we are in a luxuries and comforts buying space. We just keep thinking that everything, we are allowed to do everything. We have the resources to do everything. And then if you don't get it, you just like, you know, and including people who shop and buy a lot of clothes. You know, again, there's so many, and it's the same as me. And I, by the way, this is, it sounds judgmental, and it is a bit judgmental. It's coming out, being honest. But there are still things, there are lots of things that I still do that with. You know, it's a societal and cultural way of looking at things. And for example, me with coaching, I still struggle. Even though I'm a coach, I see all of the value, right, that we've mentioned, we've talked about. And I still go, why am I spending £400 a month on a coach?
Yeah.
And like, it baffles me because it's changed my life. It's also saved me so much money, like way more in it. So much money, time is the most important one, freedom, whatever else. And I guess the thing that I'm kind of getting onto is that often it is because we can't measure a lot of these things that those types of things do. And you know, like you mentioned with food, we can't really see it in an output set sense, right? We can't go, oh, that has led to that. And it's why all the things that are being sold to you, right, going back to all the inputs, I think is a really interesting conversation. It's like all the stuff that you're seeing online is not ultimately the thing that's going to make you happy. We're all diving in to, you know, take in as many things and hear as many podcasts, even this fucking podcast. Like, it's not, might change the way you think for a bit, but it's actually what you do, and you get out and you go and have a bit of time with yourself, which I think is the most powerful. Yes, you need lessons, you need learnings, but I actually think where I really learn is I learn about myself, and it's listening to that inner voice. And it comes back to the importance of the people I think who are going to have the most peace, who are going to be actually the smartest and the most successful, are the ones who are able to restrict the amount of inputs that we have in our lives. I don't know if you agree or disagree or see a different side of that.
I completely agree. And the reason is restricting the input. Like, the quality of your output is determined by your input, and most people don't even know what they've already got, because they're just bombarded with more input. And everyone these days, like, we're living content paradise. And I think the reason for podcasts like yourself and, you know, hundreds of thousands probably at this point, other podcasts out there, is because people don't trust or want the information that's readily and easily available much anymore, because it's based oftentimes in fear and has ulterior motives. But the caveat to that is now everyone's consuming all the time and not doing their own thing. So take ideas, take ingredients that you're getting from podcasts, maybe from this one, maybe from another one you listen to, but go and apply that in your own life and get a real world feedback from applying something. And is this me? Is that me? Do I want to act like this? Do I want to do that? Do I want to say that? Do I want to try this? Right? Because until you actually start doing it yourself, that's you actually don't understand who you are. And then when you don't understand who you are properly, right, which we're constantly evolving and learning about, but then where do you stand in all different settings? Personal life, business life, relationships, like you don't know where you stand. And then are your opinions your own, or are they just a regurgitation of something you've heard or listened to? And I think over time, what's going to happen is, especially as the world changes, it's going to expose people who are just consuming, because they haven't got any real world feedback from the consumption. They haven't applied it. So I think as the world does change, you've got to go out there and apply this in some way, because then you mold and shape yourself. And then you're in a unique piece of code then. You're not like anyone else. And that's valuable. That's actual wealth right there, because then you become, you know, desirable. You become a leader. You become all these great traits, which cannot be taken away from you, right? But are hard to measure in the first place. Oh, why do I want to go and, you know, go and do this thing or go and do that thing when I could just X, Y, Z, 1, 2, 3. But the thing about inputs as well, man, like on social medias, I try and limit my time, but I actually only follow people who I actually know on a deep level or I'm genuinely inspired by right now. And every now and then I'll go through and I'll like unfollow people, follow some other people, but I'll keep it very, very small, very, very minimal. And you got to have the awareness around like waking up in the morning, what's the first thing you do? What inputs are you getting into your head? If you're going onto Instagram, it just happens to be people's stories are the perfect size for your thumb. It's in the middle of a pink little ring. You can see Jenny's avocado toast. You can see Christopher on the fucking waves in Barbados. Then you can see someone else petting their dog. And the next thing you know, you're subconsciously, your brain is a sponge when you first wake up. You cannot eat avocado toast whilst petting your dog in Barbados on the waves. But that's what you've told yourself you should be doing. So you're already off to a bad start. And who gives a fuck about these people you've lived in a hostel with for 3 days, 4 years ago? So it's like, why are we doing this stuff? It's actually ludicrous. Like these aliens that we're talking about, if they're going to come here, they're going to be like, look how ridiculous these humans are acting. They haven't progressed from primal whatsoever. Actually, becoming primal would be a step forward right now. So be careful what your inputs are on a day-to-day basis. Like, are you waking up in the morning? Have your phone in airplane mode for the first half an hour. Do something for yourself. Understand yourself. Just be for a while, you know. And I don't have a TV. I haven't watched TV for over probably about 13 years now. Watched a couple of series on my laptop.
Okay.
But yeah, like I'm really enjoy having less, because life becomes more when that happens. And yeah, you become less reliant on these external things. It's like, what's other people's inputs? When you go to someone's house, they've got this big house, they fill it with stuff. If you didn't have this big house, would you have the stuff? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It's like we're always looking for these external things to kind of just fill up with fluff. And then we just come so much more disconnected from ourselves during that process, I believe, which you probably realized through the silent retreat, right? Like, I'm curious about that. What was that like when you, was there hard times? Then did it become easy? Then did it become blissful back to hard? Because you've got no external dopamine to keep you stimulated and thinking about things that aren't important.
Yeah, you definitely go through withdrawal to a certain degree of just being distracted. It feels nice to be distracted because, and this is why like what we're getting at is boredom is great, because it makes when you do something really exciting and amazing creative things happen when people are bored. or stuck or don't know what to do. And we've kind of lost that to a certain degree. But yeah, I mean, you just appreciate everything so much more and you notice so many different things. And it reminds me, this is how like loads of people would have used to live, not talking for a couple of days. Like, we see that as strange, which is kind of scary because I don't actually think that that's that strange. Not talking for a couple of days and not hearing any inputs. It seems really weird to us because we've grown up in this era, but that was happening even, you know, 30, 40 years ago. We would have that space. Yes, I know people would have radio and they'd have news and they'd have things to fix, but generally, you know, you'd be stuck waiting for your mate at a bus station for like 3 hours. They might not turn up. I've heard my parents' stories. He just went and hoped that people would turn up. You know, you sent a letter. Like, it's why those types of things mean so much more as well. But yeah, lots of things come up, but really the ultimate thing is being, you know, people talk about, oh, I don't know what's me and what I like and what I don't like. That's because we're absorbing so much and we're not cutting it out and just listening to see what comes up. The first day or so is like all of the classic crap. Oh, what happened on the way to the retreat and what that guy did yesterday to me and what I saw on Instagram. Second day just becomes a bit more like, oh, these are my surroundings. This is what I got. And cool. I've noticed my thoughts have changed a little bit. And, oh, that's something I really want to do. That's something I've wanted to do for ages. Why the fuck have I only just thought about that? It's like these little things. You don't know what's going to come up. I've done it twice. Different things have come up. I've had different focuses, but I find it peaceful. I know that a lot of people find it scary and a lot of people, it would be too much to start with. But that's why I say, but I'm someone that doesn't really use social media. I mean, I use it as a tool for my business, but I actually haven't spent the time of what you've done, which I would like to do and probably will spend some time after this doing, which is kind of just create a separate page and just follow the people I want. Because I know, you know, even from this rant that we're kind of going on about, it's a passion. It's a passionate rant that we know, we see it in our friends and in ourselves, that actually what you have to do is make a bit of effort to use these things that are amazing, but most of the time and most of the things that they're being used for are really useless, yeah. Absolutely useless. And I'm realizing that more and more now because what you said, and I want to finish on, and I wanted to let you finish because what you were saying before was just really hit. And I think it will hit with a lot of people. But it's just realizing that we need to just listen to ourselves more. And if you force it a little bit, you know, put your phone away, do these things that just allow less distractions. It has to be a physical sort of change because it's impossible to go up against the machines. You know, I'm in there. If I start looking at Instagram, I'm on there. Like it's going to roll and 20 minutes is going to go by. So I just restrict it all, whether it's with a blocker and these are more sort of practical things, or you just go out for a walk and you leave your phone like a psychopath. It's like simple things where you just stop taking it out. And I really think that is where you will reconnect, as we're saying, with yourself more. And that is where you'll find more of the answers that are within you. Because I think sometimes people find the answer online. They're like, oh, that guy's just said that what changed his life was doing this. And it's like, yeah, it changed his life. It's not going to necessarily change yours. It's great for allowing you to think bigger, right? And you've probably seen that coming from a small town. But you created all of your experiences. And look at you. You didn't need to go on social media for it. And that, I think, is ultimately making people, and it makes me sometimes think I've done it all. And I'm like, no, I haven't. You've got to actually do it to feel it and experience it. And shutting that off has been the single most, including the news. The news is one that we think is really helping us keep informed. And it's rubbish because it's whatever anyone else wants us to keep informed by, and it's what keeps our attention the most. And nothing, it's a good point to, at this point, just to say, I've done this for about 4 years now, where I've probably dipped in. I don't have any apps that tell me the news. I barely know. I'm the guy that everyone was like, oh, did you see the, you know, the Queen died? And I'm like, no, but that's really sad. And oh, you know, whatever. It doesn't, it just doesn't affect my life like it does with everyone else. And all to say, as we've gone on loads of tangents, I hope it's been useful for people listening, but it seems scary to let go of the news, and it seems like an unnormal thing, but the news was only became a thing, what, in the last 100 years, that we needed to keep up to date with everything that was going on in the world. Like, if the biggest disaster happens, there's nothing you could do about it anyway. And anyone around me will just let me know if there's a tube strike in London and if the weather's going to be bad. Those are the things that I can guarantee I will know. And you know what? If I end up going to the tube and there's a tube strike, people be like, oh, you know, but you need to know it for that. You know, you wouldn't have known. I'm like, well, I'll learn something new from that experience for sure. If you've got that attitude, you can do it. But anyway,
that was drawbacks.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And if you have the mindset where you don't feel like, oh, at this, and you look at like the negative outlooks, aspects of trust, right? Of trusting this thing and trusting yourself. It's not always going to work out. But when you have that and you're like, right, we're just going to see whatever the outcome, it's really freeing. But yeah, look, I want to probably hold it. I would love to carry on, but I think it's been an awesome conversation. I feel like a part of me was really noticing that it wasn't even a rant. It's almost like a passionate thing. And I feel like in society, and I've almost done this to myself sometimes, is, oh, but just always stay neutral about things. And, you know, you don't want to, but it's important. It's really important to have these topics and almost have this tone. Because I'm really passionate, like yourself, about just showing people what the other side of a lot of these things can be like. And I'm not perfect, and I fuck up all the time, and I'm still a huge work in progress, like yourself, and still get bogged down and beat up by all sorts of stuff. But just making a few little steps towards giving yourself more space to be you, like you said earlier, is what I'm so passionate about. And sometimes you got to fucking rant about it.
Yeah. And passion's a good thing, you know, and when it comes down to it, if you don't control these things, they will control you. So if you've got to learn the same way you're disciplined with other things, you've also got to be disciplined with that all it is a conduit. It's made of glass, metal, and plastic and crystals. You know, it's modern day witchcraft or wizardry. It's actual magic, how quartz crystal communicates. Yeah. And all it is, it gives you access. It doesn't mean that, you know, you don't, it means that you need to control it. It's like having a wand at all times, you know? So controlling that.
Same as that rational part of your mind you talked about. It's just using them as a tool. And using them when you need them, which is like why I've got a phone, why I've got loads of other apps that I use.
Super. But thank you for having me on, mate. It's been, a great conversation. The tangents have all looped back around. And hopefully people find this very, very beneficial.
Yeah. And that's what I've been doing, really trusting, as people are probably noticing in the last few episodes that have been going out, is just really trusting and having the conversations and seeing what comes up. And it might not be for everyone. I've definitely had all sorts of comments just to say, you know, when we just go off and we have a bit of direction, but we really see what we truly feel like talking about, it's amazing what comes up. And the real stuff really comes up. Thank you for being present. I'd love to go on for another few hours, but I'm sure we'll do it off air.
Yeah.
Thanks again. And where We'll put where people can find you. There's a lot of stuff. Ryan is kind of big on LinkedIn and a few other places, which we'll put in the show notes. I really would follow his journey. There's a lot of insights to learn. So yeah, once again, thanks, Ryan.
Super. Thank you very much, Alexei.